You're listening to In the Event We Don't Make It with Tori and Amjad.
I'm Tori Stapleton.
And I'm Amjad Osman.
And this is In the Event We Don't Make It.
If you come across these files,
this is what was going on during the coronavirus 2020.
So make sure to tune in to see exactly what was happening.
Or don't.
Let's jump in.
We're back.
What day is it today?
No idea.
I think that's the story of our lives these days. Every single conversation I've been in today, I think I've asked somebody and they didn't know either what day it was today.
Is it Wednesday?
Let me look at my phone. I actually don't know anymore.
Tuesday, March 24th.
2020.
Tuesday, March 24th. What are we talking about today?
Man, you know, there's a lot going on in the world today. And obviously, this whole corona shit is still going on. We're still battling it. The latest thing that happened as of recent is the president of the United States came out today and said that he wants to restore business as usual back in the United States as of April 12th.
Okay. That's ambitious.
It's not just ambitious, it's ludicrous.
You think it's ludicrous just because you don't think we'll be out of this by then?
No.
Okay.
All the health experts today said we are far from going back to business just yet. We haven't even gotten over the hump of reaching the maximum number of people who have been tested for the virus, let alone have the virus. So for him to say that he wants everything to resume as usual April 12th is complete ludicrous bullshit.
Yeah, I think it sounds good, but just doesn't seem quite realistic. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who would like business to resume. I mean, a lot of people that are losing money, but the reality of it is until we get on top of this thing and start seeing that decline, you know,
that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, it's not going to be the case.
I mean. No. So not only is what he's saying, you know, not good, not useful, not helpful, but you're giving people false hope.
Right.
If I have to look at April 12th and circle it as a date on my calendar, you know, I'm going to look forward to that day. But only if it's within reason. And so I think anything he says, I just kind of toss out my ears at this point.
At this point, I've been doing that for a long time with him anyway. It's like
I've always done that when it comes to him. Like, but I was hoping that he would emerge as a leader of this nation at this point and at least say things that are factually based.
Nah, come on, man. Come on.
I guess I got my hopes up.
Yeah. I mean, that's you probably think Santa Claus is real still, too.
Man, I'm open to the concept.
That's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing. You know, you have this hope for this guy, but he continuously just takes every opportunity to let us know that he's an idiot.
Yep.
You know? Yep. At this point, if you're still following and supporting this man, I'm judging you.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not going to judge you for too much longer because you can judge yourself long enough on your own time. But, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine today that was traveling back and forth from San Francisco to L.A. A friend you got a chance to meet, actually, Michelle. And she was telling me that, you know, there's a lot going on in the world, but, you know, there are some positive things. And so I thought that you and I could spend the focus of today's conversation talking about some of those positive things and maybe uplift some folks and inspire them and get them to think that there is potentially still some hope out there in regards to the situation. So
there's definitely a lot of positive coming from it. I'm seeing a lot of unity across the board. I mean, we spoke about, you know, the DJs going live and everybody hopping in there live and, you know, but, aside from just entertainment, I just feel like people are really coming together. I'm seeing a lot of companies, corporations or people, who have resources, lending their resources out to other people. My buddy in New Orleans, Slang Magic Fishing Team, Kenwan Nichols is using their vessel to go out and catch fish and feed people in New Orleans who are without meals right now.
So, that's awesome.
That's a beautiful thing. I just saw my buddy Lanny at Active Faith. I saw, Active Faith has a bunch of N95 masks that they're donating. So he purchased them. I guess he purchased them early in the game, like when this first started becoming a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he got them from a manufacturer, and now he's donating those masks. So
that's amazing, man.
I'm seeing a lot of people utilize their resources, man.
Yeah, I've seen some similar things. I think from people that I know, I've seen people put together fundraisers. I've seen folks go out and volunteer at food banks and really try to help be part of the solution.
Right.
Obviously, it's difficult to do that, but they take every precaution they possibly can to make sure that they're clean and that the things that they're passing on to other folks are clean, because there's a lot of people that are in need out there that I think are commonly neglected in situations like this. And so I actually found this woman on Twitter who is named Shirley Rains, who happens to be the CEO of a business called Beauty to the Streets. It's a 501c3 nonprofit organization that provides makeup, showers, hair color for homeless women servicing Skid Row. So right here in LA.
Right.
Right. But she's based out of Long Beach, California. And so I thought it was amazing because she donated over 800 showers and haircuts and all that stuff to people here in Los Angeles just in a span of a couple weeks. And so I recently saw her trending on Twitter because she went out and was donating meals mm-hmm. to people in Skid Row that needed access to food as well. You know, shout out to people like her. Also, there's a famous designer by the name of Kirbito on Instagram, popularly known as Kirby. It's his first name. And he put together a fundraiser as part of his business. And so they set aside $5,000 to get a bunch of N95 masks and gloves. And that $5,000 grew, thanks to the help of their lawyers, apparently, to $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Then on top of that, they started with $50,000 to help small creative-based businesses during this time. With the help of their friend John Rubio, they grew the fund to $100,000. So they've been able to donate over $78,000 to 38 different businesses, including 7 fashion brands, 3 health and beauty brands, 2 wellness studios, 5 cafes and restaurants, 3 childhood education initiatives, as well as 2 concept stores and more community-focused creative businesses. Now that's dope.
That's fire, bro. This is just people taking action. That's all it is.
It is. It's
using ridiculous. Their platforms, using their resources, and taking action, man, and getting people behind them. That's all it is. And I feel like this time is definitely inspiring that, you know, the more people sit at home and, you know, they're not distracted. You know, it's human nature to want to give. We get a lot of happiness from giving and helping others. And I just feel like now with all the distractions of your everyday life, you know, your job or whatever your responsibilities are, with all of those being somewhat limited by this, you know, by this virus, I feel like it's just giving people a clearer view as to where they can help and mm-hmm. how they can lend a hand. And I see people doing it, and it's a beautiful thing, man. It's a beautiful thing.
I've loved every moment of seeing that, because I think it reminds us that humanity is better than how we've treated each other up until this point.
Right.
I think that there are a lot of moments for us that we're going to be able to reflect back on, funny and sad, but really telling of our society based on what's happened so far.
Absolutely.
Look at the people that have rallied around people at the border. Look at the people that have rallied around the homeless, around the elderly, around kids and dogs and pets in the beginning, because we all thought that all those people were really vulnerable.
Right.
I think it's been amazing to see so many people come together. But, you know, I think everything is pretty much closed in LA, with the exception of the grocery store. I was thinking about what you said in terms of wearing gloves and preventing the spread. And I was listening to NPR this morning. And on NPR,
that seems to be a daily routine for you.
Yeah, I listen to it every day. They're credible. They're very educated. They share the news in a very clear and concise and factual, you know, manner. And so I don't have to question if the things they're talking about are realistic or have to do additional Googling on their work, because they're not going to put out anything that's not true. And so there was a gentleman on there today who was talking about what it would take to stop the coronavirus here in the United States altogether immediately. He said, if there were a magic wand that were the perfect solution to this entire situation, what would happen is that everyone in the United States of America would stay home for 2 weeks and sit at home in isolation 6 feet apart from another person and completely avoid contact with one another. In that 6-week span of time, you go and you conduct testing. folks that are asymptomatic, you won't know that until you do the test.
Right.
But at least they'll be okay and they'll be at home. Folks that are sick will be at home and will start to experience symptoms, and they can be the ones to go to the hospitals and healthcare facilities to get the care that they need. And that's how you stop it. That is a magic wand good. Situation. It sounds fantastic.
Sounds great. It's just getting everybody to comply with that is a whole nother story. You know, people are stubborn, man.
Yeah.
Is one thing that I'm noticing is that, like, you know, trying to get our parents to stay inside the house, or, you know, trying to tell the group of people that we were told are more susceptible to, you know, more vulnerable, trying to get them to stay in the house is crazy. It's like it's you know, roles have changed, right? Like, it's
they've changed.
You got to put your parents on punishment, man. So I mean, you know, my dad today was just at the, you know, he's going to the park every day to, like, you know, walk around and stuff like that just to get some air, and he's by himself. But, you know, I know my dad. I know he's probably, you know, stopping at the little corner store, getting his little scratch offs and just touching shit he shouldn't be touching. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, man, go inside the house, man. You know what I mean? So it's rough. But that magic wand situation sounds good, man. It's like, it's just rough, man.
In theory, it sounds great.
But, you know,
execution is the problem.
Execution is definitely the problem, because there's just a lot of people. I mean, I'm not going to say a lot of people, but there's some people who just don't care about humanity. They don't care about, you know, their fellow humans enough to do it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I saw there was a video online that some guy had tested positive and he was out at the grocery store just like, yo, nah, fuck that. I'm not quarantining. You know, it's like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah. See, I mentioned last time we spoke, I don't wear gloves to go to the grocery store,
right.
But I also don't
condoms
go
either.
Oh my God.
we spoke about this. God. That's why you got that advertisement. He had an advertisement on his Twitter for
Trojan
condoms. And he's like, why would I get this? Cause they know you need to wear them. That's what it is. You know, I saw a meme before you get into it. I saw a meme today that said, imagine surviving all of that raw sex and then dying from an unprotected handshake.
Oh my God.
Bro, that's comedy, dog.
That is hilarious. But that reminds me of, I think, a meme you put up too that said, imagine going to prison over selling weed or you know, whatever at that time, and weed becomes now an essential store that needs to stay open, or dispensaries become essential stores.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
It's messed up.
Yeah, it's not even funny. It's just like, could you really imagine? You're in jail for weed, and then all of a sudden, you look, everything shut down except for
drug stores.
Drugs. You know what I mean? Stores. Exactly. So it's just pretty wild, man. That raises a whole nother topic, and, you know, something that needs to be spoken about more is, like, the prison system and the people behind the walls who are now, vulnerable. If there are cases within the prison, it can run rapid.
You know what I mean?
When you got people on top of each other. So, from what I hear, you know, prisons are taking proper precautions by testing their staff, or, you know, as they come in, they're taking their temperature and, you know, taking them through a whole process just to make sure that they're not infected. And they don't go inside the prisons and then infect one of the inmates. And
you've been in a prison, and obviously you've done that with Between the Lines. I'm curious, when you're inside there, are they generally spread apart anyway? I mean, it doesn't look like feet apart.
Hell no, 6 feet. Like, that's, man, the whole cell might be, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the whole cell is not 6 feet, you know, from side to side. Like,
no, I meant outside of their cell.
Oh, when they're outside of their cells.
Yeah.
I mean, it just depends. It's like anywhere else, you know what I mean? And when they're out on the yard, they're congregating, you know, either playing ball or, you know, whatever they're doing out on the yard. I mean, if they decide to be, they can be, but that's when they're out on the yard, but they're not out on the yard all day. You know what I'm saying? So like,
even
when you go back to your cell, you know, you and your cell, I mean, these cells are small, man. These cells are tiny, you know, so you and your cellmate, and then even your neighbor might not be 6 feet away from you, you know, it might be through a wall or something like that.
Right.
You know,
it looks scary, but I just,
the virus gets in there, it's just going to run rampant, bro.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, they can try to isolate all they want, but, you know, fortunately, they're just not set up to have everyone isolated.
I was listening to someone talk about it the other day, and it's they're saying that they're taking the proper precautions to make sure everybody's taken care of. I just hope that they also have access or the same access to those resources that people will need if they start to see and experience symptoms, because that puts them at a major risk, puts them at a complete danger. Obviously, I imagine now there are no guests.
No, they shut down. They shut down all guest visits.
And so that's fine. But those folks that are prison guards are somewhat in the same position as healthcare workers.
Oh, for sure.
Where they have to go in there and disinfect their entire bodies. And so I'm wondering if they also have protective equipment and things like that outside of the normal that they're wearing in addition to their outfit or their uniform.
I actually spoke to Coach Whipple at Corcoran State today, and she said that all the staff prior to going in, they're taking their temperature, they run them through a series of questions and just kind of like they have like a checklist that they have to go down to you know, just to try to eliminate the risk of them being, you know, infected and walking into the prison. So I don't know in terms of any special you know, equipment that they're wearing or anything like that. I don't think so. I think if they're deemed safe to go inside, they go inside just like normal. But, you know, all of the guards, all of the staff, they do go home at the end of the night.
Right.
They're, you know, they're congregating with their family mm-hmm. who has been out and about, you know, all day too. So, you know, there's a lot of risk. There's a lot of risk. But I do know that some of the older staff has been told to go home because they are, you know, deemed higher risk. Yeah. So, yeah. So everybody's kind of picking up the slack, man. I spoke to her and she's positive that they can keep this thing, you know, they can keep this thing under wraps. So,
yeah. No, I'm glad to hear that. I'm happy to hear that they're taking the, you know, the right precautions to make sure everybody's protected and safe. That's
at how Corcoran. It should be. That's at Corcoran.
But, at that one you know, place, at least.
You it's know. At that one place, at least. I know that there have been some cases at some other prisons throughout the country. I think, is it true that Harvey Weinstein tested positive for corona?
Oh, I don't know that.
I saw that online. I don't know if it's, I don't know if
that's true, but I did see some other prisons across the world where they let people out.
Yeah.
And those prisoners, those inmates came running out of there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, you're talking about in Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
There was a prison break in Brazil, and I think like 1,300 or something like that. Escaped. 1,300 people escaped.
And they just were running down the street, you know, all wearing the clothes that they had on their backs at the time. Nobody stopped to grab anything.
Right.
Some of them didn't even have shoes on, but they were running as if it was their only chance in life, which right. at that time, it probably is their only chance.
Yeah,
and if I'm them, I'd rather take my chances out in society and freedom than to be stuck in prison. Oh, so I'm running man. Too.
You're a sitting duck. You don't want to be a sitting duck.
Would you run?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to be a sitting duck. You can't put us all on the paddy wagon, man. You know what I mean? They might catch a couple of us, but 1,300 of us strong.
Right. You got to bring.
I'm staying right in the middle of that pack.
You got to bring a tank.
Right.
Come
yeah.
on.
So
come
it
on.
Is confirmed. Yeah. Harvey Weinstein really? Did test positive for COVID-19.
Is that as of today?
This was actually 2 days ago.
Wow.
Yeah, so we actually missed the ball on this one.
I don't know how we missed that.
I don't know. Well, I saw it online. I didn't know how true it was, but yeah, it actually is. You know, he's sitting in isolation right now.
He should be in isolation anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
That guy has caused a lot of problems and a lot of trouble in this world.
Well, if he contracted it, now we can only imagine who else. You know, who else in the prison
has been near
has
him.
Been exposed.
Yeah, I would wonder. You know, they always talk about the difference between white collar crimes and everybody else.
Right.
Right? Blue collar convicts. Saw some clips, but they were all fictional of Martha Stewart
when
she was in prison. And it just looked like a nicer cell. It looked like she was in there by herself. And,
well, you know, there's a difference. She decked
it out as Martha Stewart.
There's a difference between, so I think was Martha Stewart, I think she was in federal prison.
Yes.
Yeah, so there tends, I mean, obviously with money, but federal prison is a little different.
How so?
You get a little more, from my understanding, you get a little more space, a little more, you know, it could be like you're doing Fed time, a lot of like mob bosses, you know, I mean, have huge cells, yeah. huge rooms. It's just a little different.
It's like being in your own mansion.
Yeah, it's not being in a, you know, 6x6, you know.
Right.
Not
it's like
know.
A like a studio apartment.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind
exactly.
of how hers looked different. From
it's
what
like,
I saw
it's
online.
Like a country club. compared to
real prison.
Yeah, exactly. Fed time is a little different.
Yeah, I saw that and I just thought to myself, I wonder what, you know, a true well-known individual, what their experience is like in a prison compared to someone else. And I think they tried to capture that in
right.
some TV show. I think they showed a bunch of kids going in and they were yelling at them. What was that thing called?
Scared Straight. Yeah, man. Scared Straight. They started that in Rahway, New Jersey, man.
That was in your hometown?
Well, the original one, I think it came out in like 1978. There was an original one. And then they continued the program for years after that. But then they had a television show called Beyond Scared Straight as well. Mm,
it was on MTV, the original, right? Or VH1 or something.
I don't know which one. Which the original one was like a documentary. It was like a, you know, it was a movie. And then I forgot what network Beyond Scared Straight was on, but now I mean you can see the clips online all yeah. the time. It's so funny, man.
Oh,
it's so funny.
It's comedy,
man.
Because some of the people that were supposed to be yelling at them, you look at them and you're like, oh boy, you look like such a calm person, and you, right. this seems so out of character for you. I know prisoners aren't this way. They must have paid you,
right?
Must have paid you.
They definitely probably got a little, you know, shortened sentence or something like that.
I would hope. Yeah, for them to be so. Acting on TV, it's not like they're gonna have a career in acting, or you know, unless they get out and they decide to pursue right. that's not gonna be the launching point for their acting career.
I mean, nah, that's not gonna be it. Like, yeah, his brother was on Scared Straight,
right? On
we
your
gotta
resume.
Have him in our movie. Nah, man, but that the man, they broke some of them kids down, man.
Oh yeah.
some of the kids were, you know, couldn't be broken, but you know, there was definitely, you see the one where he had the dude stick his fingers in the Kool-Aid?
No.
And rub it on his lips?
What?
Yeah, man. Yeah, he gave him a packet of Kool-Aid. He was like, stick your fingers.
Oh, the powder?
Yeah, the Kool-Aid powder. Stick your fingers in that Kool-Aid. Now rub it on your lips. You never seen that?
No, that's where he, man, like, makes him, like, basically put
yeah,
on lipstick.
Said, you're going to be my bitch.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, exactly. that's my biggest fear after getting knocked out on camera is like being someone's prison bitch.
Oh yeah, no, that's not happening.
Nah.
That's not happening. You can just go ahead and just call it quits after that. Put me in isolation for the rest of my
right,
time.
Right. Just
after
don't
that.
Just don't wash your butt.
if it smells bad enough, maybe they'll run away.
Yeah, right.
You never know. There's some weird people out there. Yeah. Hey, listen, a lot of those kids, I think, they could have avoided being on those TV shows if their parents would have whooped them. If their parents would have backhanded them in situations where they were acting crazy, talking crazy, they didn't want to listen. Because look, my parents whipped my ass.
Right, right.
Right? You know, I told you I'm African, and so it's normal.
You got flogged.
Yeah.
It was a little different.
Yeah, they, yeah. The, you know, the violence in Africa in terms of, I guess, how parents spank their kids
is a little different
compared to, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's awful.
Right.
It's just different.
There's just a lack, I feel like, in a lot of, like, there's a lack of tolerance for the bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, nah, you know?
Oh, man, I remember one day my dad, he came home, and my mom, earlier in the day, you know, reprimanded me because I had called my brother a motherfucker.
Right.
And I was, like, maybe 10 years old, and she was like, what? You know, she has an accent, so she, right. What you say? And I said to her, you heard me. I said what I said. She came running
probably
up to me.
Almost exploded.
Smacked me so hard in my mouth. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that. And I knew then and then, you know, right then and there, I thought to myself, oh Lord, this is not gonna turn out well for me. She said, wait till I tell your dad. My dad comes home and she had already called him. So the minute he walked in the door, you know, he walks in the door and I made eye contact with him because I didn't know. He came. Uh-huh. He had come home like 5 minutes normally, sooner than he normally gets home. So he looks at me, I look at him, and he like drops all his stuff and starts running towards me,
mm-hmm.
right? Shoes still on and everything.
I'm gonna get that ass.
Starts running towards me, tries to take off one of his shoes and ends up throwing it at me. And I'm like, oh boy, here we go. And he corners me, but there's nothing for him to grab, right? And I'm over here like trying to dip and dodge. So this man picks up our box TV, grabs the cord from the back of the box TV, holds the box TV in one hand, and starts whooping me with the cord.
Nice.
Because he didn't have anything else
Beautiful
to use.
Execution. That's fucking awesome.
After all that, after I got my ass whooped, he put the TV down on the ground, on the floor in there, on the carpet. He said, put it back.
Yo, the fucking stress on the mental. You got your ass whooped and then had to rearrange the television. That's funny, man. You got reprimanded. That sounds
I got that sounds twice.
So much more serious. Like, yeah, I got yelled at before, but I've never been reprimanded.
Yeah, nah, that's how I knew it was serious.
Nah, man, but that's funny, man. That reminds me of like black folks in America when, you know, your grandmother says, like, you know, go out and get me a switch so I could beat your ass. Yeah. You know what I mean? You got to go out and pick the switch.
Yep.
You know, for all you that don't know what a switch is, it's basically like a tree branch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you gotta pick yourselves a lot of the time. Think about that on the mental.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go out and pick the damn branch. And if it's too thin, if you get back and that switch is too thin, you got to go out and get a bigger one, and you're gonna get your ass whipped even more. I was a bitch though. Like, when I was growing up, I was the type to cry before my parents even hit me. Like,
really?
If my parents were upset, if my parents were upset and like they gave me that look, like I was already in tears. So it was like I knew that my beating would never be that bad because mm-hmm. I was already crying. Like, I beat him
too.
You
was a little actor.
Oh, I beat him to it. But I wasn't acting. I was really scared. You know what I mean? I was really afraid, you know? So
you was crying because you was actually like afraid that you were about
to
get your ass beat?
Yeah, I didn't want to get my ass beat, man. Oh, so it's like, you know, I was crying. Like I said, I'm halfway there already. Like, you know, like
a
lot of
bitch.
Kids. I was a little bitch. A lot of kids, you know, you might, you know, as you're starting to get your ass beat, you know, then you start crying eventually. And then, you know, eventually the whooping comes to an end.
Mm-hmm.
My whooping was halfway over before they even gave it to me because I was already whining, crying, snot, that fucking lump in your throat. You know what I'm saying?
And your parents already felt bad for you. They're like, oh.
They already felt bad. So they couldn't do too much.
Damn it, like, Junior.
How much could you beat a kid that's already crying?
They're like, damn it, Junior. Can you please stop hitting your brother?
man. I remember one time I was getting my ass whooped and my brother laughed. We were at the kitchen table, right? And I got smacked. My brother laughed and he got met with the swiftest smack right to the mouth. And his laugh stopped so quick. He had some milk in his mouth too. He spit the milk out.
Man.
Oh, it was terrible. Denzel, like, if you're listening, man, yeah, bro. Hilarious. I wish
That's
we could
amazing.
Like reenact that because I see it so vividly in my head. Him getting smacked and that milk just
and then you start laughing.
Oh man, nah, hell no. I didn't want no more.
Who was the discipliner in your family? Was it your mom or was it more your dad?
It was kind of equal. My mom my mom is a sweet woman, but she would give it to us too. But it was kind of equal. It was kind of equal. They balanced it out pretty good. And it was my parents were always on the same team. So there was never like, you know, there was never like, you weren't getting beat by this one and then running to this other one for any sort of sympathy or anything. Like, it was like, nope. Like, you know what you did. Like, you know what I mean? So, that's one thing. We couldn't play them against each other. Like, they were always on the same page.
They knew how to play your game better than you knew how to play your game.
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
That's what's up, man.
So, yeah, me, I was a bitch, but I used to get beaten a little bit. Like, I would be, you know, put on punishment, all that shit. But
I like to think it made us better people.
I think so. I'm definitely beating my kids. You know, I'm not going to abuse my kids,
no,
but
no,
I'm going to, they're going to, you know.
There's a difference.
I'm tighten their ass up a little bit.
Listen, I'm with you. I think discipline is important, right? I think that without discipline, you end up with a bunch of privileged kids who have no idea how hard their parents work for them to have
right.
what they want. And they end up shitting on you and telling you in public, shut up, Craig. Shut up.
Right.
Shut up, Tori.
Shooting up a school or something.
Yeah. No. Come on now. We gotta teach these kids better.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Tighten their ass up when they act up. Yeah, so who was the... Who was the disciplinarian in your family, bro?
The disciplinarian in my family was my dad more than my mom. But believe me, I got it from both of them. But my dad was also just like he's a unique guy, right? He's still around. He's in Saudi Arabia. But my dad is a very unique guy, right? We went to Walmart
mm-hmm.
one day when we first came to the United States. And he was working two or three jobs at that time. Because there was a point in my life where both my parents had like five jobs between them, right? We go to Walmart. It was our routine on every other Sunday or one Sunday in the month, because that was the day, only day he had off. And we're about maybe a year into being in the United States. And my dad takes us to this Walmart and he says, hey, just grab whatever you want. We go, whatever. And he's looking at everything that's on the conveyor belt as the woman at Walmart is scanning it at the cashier. And I guess my mom must have known that he was up to some shenanigans. And so she went and she waited at the front of the cash register waiting for him to finish doing his thing. And my other brothers went with her and I stuck around and hung out with him. So as he's paying, as he's getting ready to pay, the woman is like, oh, the total is $120 or something. And my dad says to her, he says, okay, interesting, interesting. And you know, he's got an accent, so he's interesting, interesting. And he says to her, he says, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 80. And I looked at him. And I looked at her and I looked back at him and I said, oh my God, he's trying to negotiate at the grocery store at Walmart. And the woman's like, what do you mean? And he says to her, he says, I'll give you $80. And she says, but the total is 120. She points at the little small screen in front of you there. He says, yeah, I know that, but I'm trying to tell you that I'm going to give you $80. I'll give it to you in cash and we can go home. And she says, no, sir, this is Walmart. I don't know where you're from.
That's not how it works.
Well, that's not how it works here. Right. and so he says, okay, how about 90?
Nah, he's so really trying to make a deal out here.
I start tapping him. I'm like, hey, Baba. You know, I call him Baba, right? Yeah, Eric. Right. I said, Baba, this is a grocery store. They don't do that here. He said, no. One thing you need to learn in life is that everything is negotiable. And I've never forgotten that.
That's a great lesson.
But I told him, I said, yeah, but not at Walmart.
He definitely didn't get out of there. He definitely didn't get out of there without paying that $120.14 or whatever.
Yeah, no, he definitely gave him their $120. That's funny as hell. And then like every foreign parent, you know, he pulls out the receipt at the end. He's looking at everything line by line, trying to figure out what cost the most, what is what. And so till this day, every time I get a receipt from somebody, unless it's something super expensive, I just crumple it up and put it in my pocket and I look at it later. Just to make sure I didn't get overcharged for some nonsense.
Make sure you didn't get fucked.
But I hated always the fact that he would look at the receipt and be like, oh, you got this bag of candy? That bag of candy is $6. I'm like, oh, well, I guess we can return it if you want while I'm eating it.
About to add your shit up. Send you a bill.
Right.
Invoice you.
Good That's times. Funny, good That's times. Funny. This man is negotiating at Walmart. But no, I thought that was funny, man.
What else we got, man?
Other than that, man, I don't really have much else on my mind right now.
Me either, man. Well, continue doing the Lord's work. Stay inside 2 weeks. Magic wand. It should be over. We're going back to work. What, April 14th?
April 12th.
April 12th. April 12th. Let's get it, man.
Just in time.
Team Trump. Team Trump.
Yeah.
Make America work again.
Get America back to work again. You feel me? All right, y'all. Peace.
Love. Next time.
Take it easy.